Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, December 2017. Delegates at the high-level forum may put their initials on a final draft of a ceasefire agreement tonight.
I spoke to the government delegation and some members of the opposition groups. They are all agreeing that the document is good for a start. And so all they want now is they call it their fine-tuning the document. That's what they need to do.
And officials say drug use and criminal activity among South Sudanese refugees at settlements in Uganda is on the rise.
They're not taking a lot of drugs, Alikoko, Marungi. There's no schools, especially in Beti, those of Reno camps, there's no any school constructed. People are still like normal. That's why they use this kind of thing, drugs, and maybe for wasting their time.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Government and opposition stakeholders at the High-Level Revitalization Forum have been in closed-door meetings since midday at the African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa, where they are deliberating over the contents of a ceasefire document. My colleague John Tanza explains why there has been a delay in the signing of the agreement on the cessation of hostilities.
One guy who is not authorized to speak, all the delegates are not supposed to speak to the media, but he told me that In principle, the opposition came with one voice. All the different opposition, armed or unarmed, have agreed on this document, and they are happy with it, that it should be a basis for a declaration of ceasefire. And it's just a matter of languages. For instance, like the government is not happy when the document is talking about the South Sudan Defense Force should cease hostilities. They say the South Sudan Defense Force is an entity, is an institution. It cannot be held responsible for any violation of ceasefire. It should be the government.
You've had a chance to look at the document. What are the stipulations in the agreement itself?
Well, the agreement has 15 articles. Article 6 talks about the protection of civilians. This is an interesting development here. They are saying during this ceasefire period, the party shall protect civilians from any form of attacks by other armed actors operating within South Sudan. And then there's also an article talking about applicable humanitarian obligations. This is talking about access to humanitarian agencies to deliver food to areas that are mostly affected. And so they are saying that the party should uphold international law and shall allow and facilitate and keep access for people in need to receive assistance from the United Nations and other impartial international and non-governmental organizations. And this goes on to say the party should also release children and detained persons. So this is also another interesting development, that they should release all political prisoners, people who have disappeared. If they are still in the hands of parties, they should release them.
Based on what you've seen and heard, is there a chance that this document could be signed sometime soon?
It is supposed to have been signed today by this hour, but because the parties are not agreeing on certain issues here, it's a matter of words here. It's like if you put a word here and the other group will say, no, that should not be the word that should be in the document, you should have replaced it with this. It's just a matter of playing with words. But I spoke to both government delegation and some members of the opposition groups. They are all agreeing that the document is good for a start. And so all they want now is they call it their fine-tuning the document. That's the word they're using here.
Tanza, what can you tell us about the mood?
The mood that the talks here is what I will describe as bittersweet, depending on which party you're looking at. If you look at some government delegation, these are individuals within the government delegation. You see them with gloomy faces around. If you see some individuals within the opposition group, some are having, if you like, joyful mood, and, it seems like some of them, they've achieved what they want. But again, amongst some government officials, they look like this is they've lost grounds here. But when I was talking to another government official, he tells me that it's a document that the government has put a lot of compromises in it. They have compromised on a lot of things, and they are doing that so that nobody looks at the government as if they are blocking peace in South Sudan. That's the word he used.
That was South Sudan in Focus host John Tanza speaking to me from the African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa. While South Sudanese stakeholders at the forum in Addis Ababa discuss how to end the conflict by declaring a permanent ceasefire, we asked people in Juba Town about their expectations. Here's what they had to say.
As a concerned citizen of this country, who was born in the first war and just grew in it, we are tired. We are tired. We have suffered enough. And we need the peace. And let the international community make sure that this time they don't leave them. Because if they are left alone, they will not do anything. It will happen the same way last time what it has happened in Juba.
In my opinion, I would like the government to renew the peace agreement again so that the peace will be in South Sudan. We always feel insecure in our country. The government and the opposition should renew their peace agreement.
The opposition, the IO, and the government, they should install peace and they should follow the 2015 agreement, the peace agreement. It was the best, actually. No need of the new agreement. The old agreement was the best.
As a citizen of South Sudan, what I need from my government and opposition, for them just to unite, because without peace, we are unhappy right now. But what I need from you people, to unite. If the agreement you made last time was not perfect, you are supposed to think of doing a new agreement so that our people will unite and will be in peace like other countries.
Let the two warring parties implement what they have signed so that peace will come to South Sudan and we can have free movement and free education so that we can have medication and everything.
According to me, if I just understand this word of peace agreement in Addis Ababa, and actually, it's good for our people to sign for that peace, so that peace can come to this country. Because we South Sudanese have stayed for long, actually, we have been suffering. Others are running up and down. People are scared about that. So it's good for our leaders, actually, to sign for the peace, so that peace can come to this country.
Due to my suggestion to the government of South Sudan, the previous agreement is not bringing that peace that we wanted. So we were hoping that agreement would bring peace, but no any peace between those two. They should have to bring another agreement. Instead of ever discussing the previous, there's no peace.
What has happened, it has happened. They should forgive each other. When the first agreement we had, it's called a compromise peace agreement. Then they have to compromise. What does the compromise mean? And this the issue of not forgiving each other, where will they end it with? What you wanted from them is they make sure their personal differences, they put it aside, they put citizen first.
As the government and IO leaders are meeting in Addis Ababa, I need them to have a memorandum of understanding and unite us as one again, because we are right now split apart.
I want the government opposition to make a new agreement again so that a new thing will start with new year. Peace will be established in South Sudan and we will have freedom.
Our thanks to Nabil Biagio for gathering that audio in Juba Town. Police in Uganda's West Nile area say the rate of drug abuse, early marriages, and domestic violence is high among South Sudanese refugee communities living in Omugo, a new settlement site at Rhino Camp in Arua District. A West Nile police spokesperson says crime is also a problem among refugees. Omugo is one of the newly established camps in Arua District, hosting more than 13,000 South Sudanese who fled insecurity in Yei, Jubek, and Imatong states. Daniel Martin Friday has the details for VOA from Arua Town.
Barnaba Lemi is a South Sudanese refuge leader at the Omugo settlement side. Lemi says most South Sudanese youth turn to drugs due to high unemployment and a lack of educational facilities. Lemi is urging South Sudan's leaders meeting in Addis Ababa to stop the fighting and restore peace to the country.
There's no works. They're not taking a lot of drugs, Alikoko, Marungi. There's no schools, especially in Bethi. Those of Reno camps, there's no any school constructed. People stay like normal. That's why they use this kind of thing, drugs, and maybe for wasting their time. So we need the leaders of South Sudan to sit down and to bring peace so we can go back to South Sudan.
Kiren Tesira is a women leader in Umogo camp. She says the rate of early marriages is also high in the camps.
Drug abuse affects young ladies, women, and girls in our camp because there's no vocational training for our young girls opened here. No any other businesses which can help them to keep them busy. That's why at times they really mess up, and some of the parents are overworking the children. That's why they go into early marriage.
Kiden is calling on organizations helping refugees to build schools and recreational facilities in all camps that house South Sudanese girls in Uganda. 28-year-old South Sudanese refugee Martin Ayume says the economic and political instability back home deeply affects youth. Speaking in Arabic, Ayume says divorce and adultery are other problems facing young couples in the settlement sites.
We don't have something to do to raise some money for ourselves. The leaders in South Sudan should listen to our challenges. Our living conditions in the camp are not the same like in our country. Wives are abandoning us, opting for other people, and this is dangerous for our health. We don't listen to our parents because we are frustrated.
Korbugo Onzinos, a local community resident near the Omuga settlement site, says young refugees who are inebriated or high on drugs sometimes engage in crimes.
The bad things which I have seen here, these people, they took drink too much. Then disco, marungi, they forget about the war. So I appeal to them that let them be quiet, let them stay well, not stealing, not fighting. I wish we should have a peace between refugees and the host and community.
Solomon Osakan is the desk officer in the office of Uganda's prime minister. Solomon says his office is working with the police to educate the refugees on the dangers of taking harmful drugs.
Yes, there have been concerns about too much consumption of alcohol and consuming drugs like opium. The challenge is that a large number of refugees came and we settled them on new lands. It is in these new areas where these institutions do not exist. It would require for us funding to build more schools and more vocational training institutions and secondary schools in the new locations where refugees are.
Asakan says partners to Uganda and South Sudan are assessing needs for possibly expanding facilities in 2018. Angusia Josephine is the police spokesperson for West Nile region. She says they are sensitizing refugee and host communities on crime prevention and peaceful coexistence in settlement camps.
We have been doing community policing basically to sensitize our refugees and the host communities on how to prevent crime. Amongst other crimes, we are talking of theft cases, assaults and fights, sex-related offenses, domestic violence, child-related offenses, overconsumption of alcohol and drugs. We are basically encouraging them to obey our regulations, not to indulge in some of these criminal activities.
There are 150,000 South Sudanese refugees living in Rhino Camp after the violence broke out in Juba in July 2016. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Arua District, Uganda.
The UN Refugee Agency in Uganda says the huge fiscal year 2017 budget deficit is affecting South Sudanese refugees in camps across the country. Parents and teachers in settlements in the northern district of Adjumani say the performances in the end-of-the-year external examinations across the district were poor. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Adjumani in northern Uganda.
70% of pupils in settlement schools fail their examinations. Exam results at the Agodzo South Primary Schools were among the worst in the district. Duti Isaac, a member of the camp's Refugee Welfare Committee in charge of education, says 1,000 pupils took the external examinations prepared by the Ugandan government.
The performance for children this year is socially speaking, is very poor. Most of the children failed.
Isaac says no student in primary 6 scored first grade. He says out of more than 200 pupils in the class, 40 students scored second or third grades. Teacher Erwa William says he was not surprised by the results.
Teaching in general has not been all that well because the classroom's structure is not all that favorable and the children are even congested. The number of teachers are not all that enough. And you see, all those contributed to poor teaching and learning.
William says the school has only 17 teachers who are poorly paid and the work environment discourages teachers to go to classes. 11-year-old primary 5 pupil Adiana Gloria, who failed her exams, blames her teachers for her poor performance.
They don't teach every day. In 1 week, they teach three subjects. Like some of them, they don't come in classes.
UNHCR spokesperson Joyce Mbithi says the refugee agency needs more than $600 million for services at refugee camps for South Sudanese. She says the agency has only received 35% of its projected funds.
Most of the sectors are struggling. Education is very badly affected. There's a lot of congestion in the classrooms. Few teachers, few facilities, education facilities.
Teachers and parents say opening more schools, employing more teachers and paying them better will reduce some of the problems affecting student performance at various schools at the refugee settlements. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Piku in Adjumani.
Tuned to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. A stern warning against poaching in South Sudan. That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when is the last time you saw your whole extended family? What was it like?
I come from a polygamous family. You know, African setting. The last time we have met, my sister lost her husband. So we met at a funeral, so we met as a family. It was bad.
At least most of them were on a function for my sister. She was getting married, and it was fun, happy.
We're meeting on Christmas. We normally gather together on Christmas Day. They come around, and yeah, it's beautiful.
It's about 3 months ago. One of them is having a marriage ceremony. And we were very, very happy when we met. Discuss about childhood when we were small and school times. It was very, very nice.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Wildlife officials are warning poachers against killing animals as hundreds of thousands of animals in Boma National Park begin their annual migration in search of pasture and water during the dry season. The Sud wetlands in South Sudan, nourished by the Nile, are home to hundreds of thousands of Tiang antelopes, Mangala gazelles, and white-eared cob, which migrate from eastern to the western jungle state, as we hear from Dengai Deng in Bor.
Zakaria Atimanyok, the Jonglei State Director for Wildlife Conservation and Tourism, issued a strong warning to residents against killing wildlife for food.
It is forbidden completely, as it is mentioned in our Wildlife Conservation and National Parks Act 2003 and 2011. It is punishing severely anyone who kills whatever the animal it is.
Tim says wildlife officers will arrest anyone who kills wild animals for food or commercial enterprise.
What we are doing is just moving from counties, as I have deployed my forces now. Each county of the 14 of the Jonglei, 14 counties, so they are just given a mandate to protect and to work collaboratively with the communities, with the chiefs and with the commissioners.
Zakaria says there is a strict prohibition on poaching in South Sudan and violators will be punished.
There are fines and there are sentences. From the small animals, right away from the smallest one, you are caught red-handed with the bush meat of these one small animals. You are sentenced to 10 years prison, or it is values in terms of money. not mentioning the big animals, which are known as elephants, giraffe, hippopotamus, buffaloes, and rhino. They are completely forbidden.
Wildlife is a source of revenue for the government, and Zakaria says South Sudanese authorities will protect the game reserves across the country.
Our war, we didn't complete our animals, but the wars of the other countries, like the American Civil War, that would be 17, 16, they completed the animals. And in Europe, the First World War, they have actually completed to the extinction of their animals. Yeah, those countries which have actually extinguished their animals, they are usually come into Africa to buy. We are having animals which are not in other areas, like Nile issues and white ear cops and Tiang. Tiang, you can't find it anywhere less here in Greater Jonglei.
26-year-old Botan resident Malwanga Yuen agrees that wildlife must be protected, but says the dire economic circumstances in the country may force some people like himself to hunt wild animals for food. Speaking in his native Dinka language, Malwak says he kills small animals like gazelles and antelopes to feed his three children.
I kill small animals because there are very many. Killing them for food cannot finish them because they are breeding more. But big ones like elephants and giraffe, we don't kill them, even if we find them in the forest.
Another Botan resident, Rej Ake, says the ongoing economic hardship forces some residents to kill wild animals for food.
In fact, initially, it was not a good idea that people should have to kill animals for food. But currently, because of situation in South Sudan, where food scarcity is all over and people have no an alternative, then you may not let yourself die and you have an alternative that you can take.
Akej is urging the government to improve security so that residents can cultivate their farms and produce food for themselves instead of poaching. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
United Nations and South Sudan government officials are trying to beat back the fall armyworm, which has destroyed crops across the country and increased the risk of food insecurity. The Japanese embassy in Juba has donated $3 million to support a program aimed at eradicating the armyworm. UN agencies warn that unless quick measures are taken to control the spread of the pest, many more people will be food insecure in South Sudan next year. Waki Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
Pierre Vautier, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization's deputy country director in South Sudan, says the Japan-funded project will train farmers on how to eradicate the armyworm in order to boost crop production.
This joint initiative will seek synergies to assist farmers who have been severely affected by the fall armyworm to be able to respond by himself directly in the field when the moment will occur. Funding from the government of Japan will be critical to equip farmers with necessary skills and knowledge to mitigate the damage caused by the fall armyworm, as well as set up control committees to strengthen national surveillance and monitoring system, and as well as early warning.
Matthew Gordon, Undersecretary at the South Sudan Agriculture Ministry, says the spread of the pest may exacerbate food insecurity because farmers don't know how to combat the worm.
The country is in war, we are food insecure, and if it is coupled again with fall armyworm, I don't know how will the result be. We are appealing to you, partners, to come to our help.
The fall armyworm was first reported in Western and Central Africa last year before spreading to Southern Africa over the next several months. Earlier this year, the armyworm was confirmed in Eastern Africa. The FAO says the pest is now in 25 countries across Africa, creating food insecurity. FAO officials say the pest feeds on 80 crop species. In high levels of infestation, it can lead to significant yield losses of important cereals such as maize, rice, sorghum, and legumes, as well as vegetable crops. Vatui says if not stopped, the fall armyworm will make food insecurity even worse in South Sudan.
2018 will be crucial for the food security of the country. It also will be crucial for the future of the country. If we are not preparing our best for the next crop production, we may face higher problems in the country. So it's absolutely important that this pest has been tackled at the same time as the gap of crop productions in the future.
World Food Programme Country Director for South Sudan, Adnan Khan, says the $3 million USD project is an opportunity to manage the pest. Khan says 8 South Sudanese states have been affected over the past 7 months, including Magui County in Imatong State and parts of the Bahr El Ghazal region.
This ceremony marks an essential step towards ensuring food security by arresting the threat posed by the fall armyworm, which, if not dealt with, presents a new threat to people's food security in the country.
According to the United Nations, 5 million people across South Sudan are unable to feed themselves this year. The situation is expected to worsen next year when the number is projected to hit 7 million if the conflict continues and donor funding falls short. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Here's a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ayan. Government and opposition stakeholders at the high-level forum have been in closed-door sessions since midday at the African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa. They've been wrangling over language in a ceasefire document. All of the opposition parties are reportedly speaking with one voice at the talks. The opposition parties say they want to talk about power sharing and security arrangements. A ceasefire is expected to be signed by all parties by Friday. Ugandan authorities in the West Nile area say drug abuse, early marriages, and domestic violence are on the rise in South Sudanese refugee settlements, including a new one at Rhino Camp in Arua District. Amugo is one of the newly established camps in that district, which hosts more than 13,000 South Sudanese who fled insecurity in Ye River, Jubik, and Imatong states. Barnabin Lemmy, a South Sudanese refugee leader at the settlement, says most South Sudanese youth turn to drugs because they have no jobs or classes to attend. And finally, the UN Refugee Agency in Uganda says overwhelming budget deficits have affected South Sudanese refugees in camps across the country. Parents and teachers say the performances during end-of-year examinations across the district were terrible. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Carol, and that's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Season of Peace by WJ.
Now and forever.
So, is that good?
And WJ was the king of Lokulili was
season of peace.
And WJ was Yehu, them said.
You're going to kill it, woman. Kali Hoskisi Mubara.
We've been listening to WJ with the song Season of Peace. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. We'd like to know what you think about our show. You can send us a comment on the web at southsudan@voanews.com or check us out on our Facebook site at South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Ragil fatal, and it's a how we look at it, so ragil tap.